everyone. I'm Amanda Balbi, managing editor at Consultant360.com. Over the last decade or so, obesity has become one of the top health concerns in the United States. Obesity is dangerous because it can lead to myriad comorbidities. A new literature review shines a light on the effects of obesity on health and well-being. Today, I'm joined by the author of the review, Sharon Free. She is a family nurse practitioner and a professor at the College of Nursing at the University of South Alabama. Thank you for speaking with us today, Sharon.
You're welcome, Amanda. Thank you for inviting me.
To start, can you give us an overview of your review and what did you find?
Well, you know, an overview of what I found is that it's no surprise, but really, you know, 3/4 of Americans are either overweight or obese, and obesity is a disease that's really the most prevalent disease in America. And I think something I want to highlight is that obesity is a disease. It has epidemic rates, and many refer to it as a pandemic. It's a global problem, and individuals are also getting heavier at much younger ages. In fact, many predict that this is the first generation of children that will not outlive their parents due to the fact of overweight and obesity. And in terms of mortality rate, obesity is associated with an increase of mortality with a life expectancy decrease of 5 to 10 years. And that's significant. I mean, that's really a significant number. And I think what really brings us to is that obesity has so many comorbid conditions. And what I mean by that is there's so many health issues and chronic diseases that are really linked to obesity. In fact, I read something recently that even pointed to about 230 diseases are traced to obesity. You can go through the article and just, I kind of really list system by system all the systems that are affected by obesity and the diseases that occur. And I think the obvious ones, I mean, the metabolic, I mean, we definitely see an increase in type 2 diabetes and prediabetes and obviously insulin resistance and all the dyslipidemias, and also metabolic syndrome, something that's really interesting and really sad, but that they now say that between 20 to 25% of cancers are related to obesity. And again, of course, the cardiovascular, the GI, there's really an increase right now in NASH and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, of course the GI, the musculoskeletal, the osteoarthritis, stroke, and again there's so many obstetric issues related to pregnancy-related hypertension, infants with low birth rates, preterm, increased C-section, and gestational diabetes, multiple skin conditions, and of course the very complex psychological conditions that are associated from depression, anxiety, and also obesity stigmatization. And so many of these individuals are stigmatized and go through so many heartaches related to that. And that's really a big issue that many people have to really deal with. There's respiratory with obstructive sleep disorder, increased surgical risk, and wound infection, reproductive. There's a host of reproductive issues with men and women, and with extremities, with deep vein thrombosis. And also there's obesity-related morbidities in children and adolescents. And obesity is really adversely affecting the health of young people. You know, we're seeing really high rates right now of type 2 diabetes in teenagers. You know, years ago, you would never think of treating an adolescent for type 2 diabetes. That was a disease that we would see in the 40s and 50s, but now we're seeing that much higher rates. We're seeing lipid disorders in kids. Again, asthma, poor dental health. We're actually seeing some non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, gastroesophageal reflux. It's really also affecting sexual development. We're seeing a delay in puberty in boys and advanced puberty in some girls. Again, there's an increase of polycystic ovary disease, and then again, anxiety, ADHD, depression, poor self-esteem, and again, just a host of sleeping problems. So we're really seeing these obesity-related conditions in adults and children.
In your opinion, what factors contributed to this increase in obesity?
You know, that's a great question, and I think there's multiple factors. one of the main factors is genetics. Genetics plays a role in how efficiently your body converts food into energy and how your body burns calories. So genetics plays an important role, and I think that obesity is definitely a multifactorial disease caused by many components, and sometimes individuals are more genetically predisposed to obesity, and then if they're put in an environment that really, maybe an obesogenic environment, they have higher rates of obesity. So genetics, I think inactivity, of course, you know, there's higher times of screen time. People are sitting much more than years less. Sleep is critical. People are getting less healthy sleep times, and a lot of times the screen time and sleep time play a role together. Increased screen time, sometimes individuals have a difficulty in sleeping. Again, unhealthy diet, the high calorie, high fat foods that really have really high fructose, that have a lot of components, maybe larger portion sizes, maybe more consumption of fast foods. Also, high amounts of stress can really play a role in obesity development, and also unhealthy environments. There's been so much research now looking at the social, environmental, and chemicals such as cigarette smoke, air pollution, flame retardants, pesticides. There's a host of problems that all play together in really attributing to this increase of obesity.
And can weight loss ameliorate the health risks associated with obesity?
Absolutely. You know, weight loss, really 5 to 10% reduction in total body weight is associated with improved outcomes for many obesity-related diseases such as type 2 diabetes, dyslipidemia, hyperglycemia, osteoarthritis, GERD, hypertension, and further benefits might even be evident with greater weight loss. We have found with a 10% weight loss, we're seeing improvements with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and a lot of the sleep apneas. So weight loss benefits are really there in terms of comorbidities, and really can improve mortality rates, and it doesn't have to be a huge amount. Sometimes 5 to 10% can really make some drastic improvements. So yes, weight loss can ameliorate the health risks associated with obesity.
And how can nurse practitioners and providers in primary care ensure their patients are serious about weight loss?
Well, I think that nurse practitioners and primary care providers, first of all, really need to show respect and a willingness to work with people. And I think that's something that providers need to be aware of is weight stigmatization. And many of these patients come in and they have really been treated poorly by the population, and sometimes providers, too, can also not knowingly make these individuals perhaps feel like stigmatized. So I think it's so important to really have an approach that's an accepting approach that's willing to work with the patient and truly involve the patient in the process and really work with the individual to take the steps and provide an atmosphere that's a safe atmosphere that the patient is really willing to open up and talk about some of the issues and provide support and resources to help these individuals. And I think nurse practitioners need to really be aware of the pharmacological support, nutritional support, support groups that are available for these individuals, and really apply a multifactorial approach to help these individuals to the best of their ability. So I take obesity counseling, obesity treatment very seriously, and I treat it like I would with someone with hypertension, someone that came in with diabetes. I take it that seriously, work with the individual, and through some mutual agreed upon goals, work together with these individuals and bring them back timely to continue to work on that. It's again, like I take working with my patients with obesity as serious as my patients with hypertension.
And what are some weight loss strategies patients can employ to lose weight and maintain weight loss?
Amanda, that's a great question. And I think there's so many strategies out there, but I'm going to share some that I use that have been helpful and I've seen quite a bit of success. You know, the first thing is it really needs to be mutually agreed upon. And, you know, one thing I tell patients, you know, I say, listen, it's not your fault. There's so many factors and so many causes of obesity. And I think I start my conversation opening up that there's so many things that play a role. And most of my patients that I work with, they have tried so many diets in the past. So I just start the conversation with talking about opening the door and then working on some mutual goal setting. And I'm looking at some lifestyle goal setting. And again, I work with them if pharmacological therapy, I'm big on using that because that really helps them to reach their goal. I look at some really personalized individual plans to work with them in terms of eating, activity, stress. I look at their sleep patterns. I really do a very thorough history, and then I really work with them on what we can do and what they can identify, some changes that can be made. And then the next thing is I really work with them in terms of realistic weight loss goals. You know, a goal of 5 to maybe 15% of their initial body weight. The key is that the goal has to be realistic. And I really take time to show them the health benefits of modest weight loss. So many times individuals come in and they have these huge weight loss goals, and I just say, you know, listen, if we can just focus on 5 to 10%, maybe 15%, let's be realistic and let's work on getting to that goal and then move on to the next, because they will see some definitely improved health indices with some weight loss of that percentage. And then I work with them on healthy habits that they can implement in their life within their life schedule. And, you know, one thing I start with is sleep. Do they get enough sleep every night? And what can they do to really promote healthy sleep hygiene? That's a big component. I work with them. I work with them on stress, things that they could do for stress reduction, what they can do to help themselves in terms of even stress relievers, and look at some ideas that they have and really work with some what they can do in their life. I do recommend working with them in terms of a food diary to help them just keep track of their intake as well as their activity. I do encourage my patients to weigh themselves every day, and this has been documented in the research, but weighing themselves every day just gives them a point of where are they today. And a lot of times my patients with hypertension, I'll say, you know, check your blood pressure, check it frequently, check it often. And I think it's the same thing with weighing themselves every day. I really work with the concept of pre-planning. Pre-planning is a huge aspect that can really help individuals. You know, pre-planning would be, you know, planning their meal plans, having a grocery list, planning their snacks. So I really work with them on the whole concept of pre-planning. And pre-planning really does help, as that they make a list out for the week. They just take some time out each day to kind of pre-plan their meals, whether it's making a meal for lunch, taking out something from the freezer for dinner, and really working off a plan. And then the next thing I do is I really help them look at how they can create a healthy home environment. And I think it's important that we realize that what we have in our home is what we really, it's available to eat. This is something I do a lot with working with mothers of young children, but this is also very effective for adults and families altogether, and to avoid bringing unhealthy foods into the home. And I know that if there's unhealthy foods in my home, I will most likely eat them. So one of the biggest things I can do is get my family in agreement and really, really focus on the majority of the time bringing healthy foods in the home, increasing the fruits and vegetables that are available, and having fruits and vegetables everybody likes, and trying to keep them stocked and fresh. I try to encourage individuals to avoid sugar drinks and even diet drinks, to focus on just drinking water, putting lemon in. I go through a whole thing with my patients, just the importance of kind of getting used to drinking water, because a lot of times people are so used to drinking soda that it's like they have to almost retrain themselves to really start drinking water, maybe putting lemon in it, putting lime. That sometimes can help them just to kind of start really enjoying just water. And I really encourage them to hydrate and to drink plenty of water. And then I'm really, one thing I'm real big at is healthy snacks, because we all need snacks. Sometimes you eat your meals and then you get hungry in the afternoon, and if you don't have a healthy snack available, we all run to the vending machine. But I really encourage them to pack healthy snacks to work. Encourage them to load healthy snacks in their kids' backpack, fresh fruit, vegetables. I always jokingly say, you know, I throw some apples in my purse, some nuts, and I say, this is my fast food. But it seems like I don't go anywhere without some snacks in my purse just because I do get hungry. And I just encourage my patients the same way. Just keep healthy snacks with you in your office, in your car, in your purse, your backpack, and also do that for your family. And it really does help. And something, too, that I really encourage, and there's a whole body of research, but I really encourage families to increase their number of frequent, healthy family meals. There's been so much research to show that frequent family meals are associated with really a reduction in excess weight gain in pre-puberty children. Adolescents at any level of baseline family meal frequency actually had a reduced odds of being affected by overweight obesity 10 years later than adolescents who never had family meals. So family meals is a really important measure that we can do, and it really can decrease obesity in our children. But also, even the parents that eat regular family meals at home tend to eat healthier than just eating a meal in front of a television, or that just purposely having some family meals is really associated with a healthier dietary intake. And there's such a strong body of research with family meals that the communication around a table and keeping that positive and making that a time of connecting has so many emotional benefits and benefits in so many areas. So frequent healthy family meals is something I definitely discuss and spend time talking with them and helping them with strategies. And that's where I really talk a lot about meal planning and planning healthy meals. And that's also, I spend a lot of time on meal planning because it really helps families and really economically cutting the cost of food prices if they can really effectively plan one meal after the next for the week. And sometimes they can use leftovers from the night before into a different dish for the next day. I try to get their families involved, their kids involved with helping them prepare their meals. And then I really encourage them, just making small changes can make a big difference. And every step and working on lifestyle changes and changes that can be sustained over time. And, you know, one thing that I always think about is, and I share this with my patient, that the average American gains 1 pound a year after the age of 25 in general, ultimately about 35 pounds by the time they're 60. So you think about it, when you're 25 years old, you know, you can pretty much tack on 35 pounds and then say that's my weight at age 60 based on statistics. And, you know, gaining 1 pound a year, sometimes you don't realize it until, you know, a few years go down the road and you're up a dress size or you're increased your pant size, and it just happens slowly over time. So I really encourage my patients to make small changes. By making some lifestyle changes that they can live with, they can really prevent this kind of compounding weight gain that usually happens in the mid-years, and then by age 60, they're suddenly 35 pounds overweight, and they're diabetic and a lot of other health issues. So just making those small changes, even 100 calories a day can be 10 pounds a year. So that's really, really important. And then I do spend a great deal of time talking about how cultural behaviors that we have can really overcome our best intentions, our best strategies. So really talking with individuals, they know that culturally, that the cultural habits that we've picked up from our parents, and are these habits healthy, and what changes can we make that we can live with, you know, and a cultural habit, for example, might be that I always have sweet tea with my meals because that's how I was raised. Well, you know, perhaps going to drinking unsweetened tea or substituting water for several of the meals, and then working on just making changes. Or, you know, if the chickens always need to be fried, can we try some alternative baked chicken recipes? Or if my family always does this, think about some other strategies. But really, as a healthcare provider, know that culture will always outrun strategy. So really working with families to look at their cultural aspects and how that really plays a role in their dietary and their even their activity patterns. And then the next thing is I really focus on keeping active. And one way to really keep active is, especially with children, as I say, if you just decrease screen time, kids are going to be active. It's important that activity stays up. And I think decreasing our screen time, we'll be moving more. They refer to sitting as the new smoking. And actually, a study with about 3,757 women found that for every 2 hours they sat on a given workday, their risk for developing diabetes went up about 7%, which means their risk is 56% higher in days they sit for 8 hours or more. Another study found that a man who sits more than 6 hours a day has an 18% increased risk of dying from heart disease and a 7.8% increase of dying from diabetes compared to someone who sits for 3 hours a day. And, you know, you might say, well, my job is a sitting job. And so I'm really encouraging people, you know, stand more, even if you can put a little exercise bike under your desk, a little tiny one that you can sit, have standing and walking meetings. If you have a desk that you can adjust, because a lot of people are now having desks that can stand, try to move around. Just be creative, and even if you just move around as much as you can. But I think long-term sitting is really, they really found that to be very unhealthy. So I guess I just encourage my patients, keep moving. Do what you can do in your life. A lot of patients find that just walking, you know, walking a mile a day or walking, increasing their steps, monitoring that really helps. So there's multiple things that you can do, and I'm just sharing a few of the strategies, but I really work with each individual. I really want to hear their thoughts and what they think they can do and what's realistic in their life, and I work closely with them, and I don't just work with them one time. I work on an ongoing basis, and I keep working with them, and they know they can always come back and share, and I really celebrate small success. Small changes and changing of habits is really a difficult thing to do. So changes as they occur, I celebrate them along the way and really encourage them and be aware that there'll be setbacks. And I tell my patients that, you know, sometimes with all the best intentions, we all have setbacks. But where do we go from here? Let's pick ourselves up the next day. Let's start over. You know, one of my favorite life sayings is some days we win and some days we learn. And I have a lot of days that I learn. And after one day that I may have had a super unhealthy eating day and exercise, I'll say, well, what can I do better the next day? So every day is a new day. And I try to encourage that whole concept with my patients.
As a final thought, what would you like to leave our audience with today?
I think what I really would like to say is invest the time to work with individuals who are overweight and obese and help them set realistic weight loss goals, frequently check in with them, have them come back to see you. Really invest in these individuals. You know, this is the number one disease today, and I think sometimes as healthcare providers, it's easy to ignore that, but make that a priority. Spend as much time as that as you do looking at other chronic diseases, because realizing that obesity plays a role in like 230 other chronic diseases, if we can really work with them on obesity, we can really decrease the onset or decrease the progression of other chronic diseases. So invest the time and meet with them frequently. Set an atmosphere, accepting atmosphere that you're working with the patient and you accept them. And one thing I want to say is never shame a patient. Years ago, people would say, oh, shaming is a great strategy for weight loss. It's probably the worst thing we can do. A lot of times people that have struggled with weight, when you would look at them and talk with them, they said that they have frequently been shamed throughout their life. So never weight shame. Make it an atmosphere of encouragement, of help. Don't stigmatize them. Show that you're really willing to work with them. Have a heart to work with them and really work with them on planning and keeping some of the activities that I shared and focusing on positive behavior changes. I like motivational interviewing. I really encourage them with self-worth, self-efficacy, that they can make the changes. I really celebrate small changes. Small changes make a big difference, and small changes all add up. And again, modest weight loss of 5 to 10% can really improve the health status of each individual. And I really work with families and preventing excessive weight gain in children. I really focus on creating a really healthy home and a healthy work environment. And I also really provide my patients with a lot of helpful resources. If you look on the Obesity Action Coalition website, they have some fantastic resources. Also, the Stop Obesity Alliance has wonderful resources. So there's multiple ways and multiple sites that I really direct my patients to, and also a lot of handouts and And sometimes, you know, what really helps one person may not help the other person, but, you know, I provide them with all the opportunities I can, and then certain things that they may really, really resonate with them could be really a life changer, something that they can really work with. I always keep the door open. I keep the conversations going, and I always have an accepting environment, just like I would with someone dealing with hypertension, diabetes. I encourage you to read the article and look through it. I go through all of these in much more detail and much more sightings of the research and the literature, but I hope you enjoy the article.
Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Amanda, for this time. I appreciate it.